And I told him on credit that he just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine.
Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Text line 251-340-1066. See some of your text. I will get to those here in time permitting, probably in the next segment as we wrap up the program. So be sure to send them my way. However, joining us now, the man of the hour, he was in last night's event at the Daphne Civic Center. One of the co-stars, I guess they will, for a moderator, a debate that I moderated with Peter Albrecht of WKRG, but Barry Moore of the 2nd Congressional District, vying for the 1st Congressional District's Republican nomination, joins us on the line. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. We were doing good. I'm like you, just recovering from a great debate and a great event last night. I was so encouraged by you guys managed the debate and how well it went for our team. So thank you. And again, like I said, just kind of recovering, but excited.
Well, yeah, well, let's talk about that. Your performance last night, you sound a little upbeat about it. Talk about that and why you seem to feel that way.
Well, you know, to me, I was just, as the debate progressed, I just felt like we were resonating with the crowd, especially my defense of the House Freedom Caucus and my friends and that fight for the future. There were so many good, I think, points that were made last night that allowed us to differentiate our records, whether it was the NDAA or whether it was Ukraine's funding. People needed to hear that. And so when you finish a debate and 74 of your yard signs walking, consider that a pretty good barometer that you had a great night.
Well, and it's my sense of it, though, that there are, like, real differences. Because, Congressman, like, typically, and I said this to Congressman Carl as well, last few cycles, it's just been, I'm the biggest Trump supporter. I'm the Trumpiest of the Republicans in this field. You're not going to find a more bigger advocate for me, for Donald Trump, than me or whatever. And it got a little tired and you know the drill. But this contest, and maybe it's because there's just two of you, it does feel like you really do have some differences, some disagreements, some, like, you know, not that Jerry Carl is some woke liberal or by any stretch of the imagination, but you and him differ to differ, and that gives the voting public at least some options here.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly, if you just look at, and that's what I love about this. I said it last night that I'm running against Jerry is that we went into Congress at the same time. There is a record. There's 36 months. And a 30-second campaign ad can't undo 36 months in Washington, D.C. And so when you see a conservative member, according to the CPAC, from the entire Alabama delegation, when you see that John Birch Society scores us higher than any Republican. And then not only that, when you see that we actually won the awards, the Democracy Awards, in the last couple of years for constituent services and workplace environment, into law. I got another bill on the floor this week on immigration. And so there is a record, and it is.
It looks like we lost the congressman. We had a really faulty connection there. We'll give it a try again here and see if we can make this work. But coming out of that, like he said, he did get a lot of feedback. I don't know exactly where the crowd was. I think it could have gone either way, but keep this in mind, guys, that Congressman Carl's home turf last night, so he would have been expected to have had a home field advantage in that debate. We got him back. Congressman, yeah, sounds like we got you back. You were breaking up a little before it dropped, but we were talking about you kind of the reaction to last night. I want to talk about some particulars about last night, and we'll move on. Were you surprised by the way that Congressman Carl kind of reacted to, hey, say something positive about your opponent, and he took it in a way different direction than you did?
Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways shows true color. I just always have said my witness is more important than my win, and I'm not going to ever say negative things about an opponent. I always try to take the high road. And I think, listen, it's like Margaret Thatcher said, Jeff, when – They don't. They'll attack you personally when they cannot run their record. And I think my record is so different than his, and as far as being the real conservative, and certainly early with Trump, that's part of that. But also the effective level in which we've served 4,000 constituents and done 580 hours of one-on-one mobile office hours, things that we can talk about, things that we have done. So I'm always glad to run on my record, and that's why I don't think it makes sense to attack your opponent. I think it makes sense to say, here is why I think you should vote for me, and then let the people make a decision. The mudslinging doesn't need to be on a stage. It doesn't need to be in an ad. It needs to be just who are the records, who are the people, and who do we need to pick to lead this country and fight for our future.
And then secondly, the other thing that the media, and I count myself among those, are kind of, you know, to raise some eyebrows. When you were asked by my co-moderator, Peter, about Nikki Haley's comments about racism in America, and Congressman Carl saying, well, everybody's a little racist, and I think he later tried, or he later said he meant to say prejudice, but what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, so I thought that was very concerning. I mean, look, this nation has had some issues in the past, but like I said, I think we had moved past that. A lot of what Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, this nation had begun to heal and move beyond that. And so my point was, you know, until Black Lives Matter, until Antifa, until folks actually started trying to make that the main issue on every issue, that's when the nation just started to begin to sort of see that the ugliness of that rear its head, if you will. And it's like I told last night, my son tells a story, Jeff, of when he was in a science class and they put red and black ants in the aquarium, and the ants function fine. They build their tunnels, they do what ants do, until somebody shut the aquarium, and then the ants turn on each other as the enemy. And that is, as a nation, we need to figure out who's shaking our aquarium, because we know united this nation is very powerful. But if we fall, it'll be from within. We don't need to be divided from within. We need to come together and move forward. And so it's the one thing to learn from your history. We shouldn't necessarily repeat that. I think there's an opportunity for us to heal as a nation and move forward. That's what I plan on doing in Congress. That's what I've been doing since I got there. And the fact that Jerry said some of the things he said were concerning, I don't think that's necessarily the right way to approach that.
Congressman, well, one thing we did, a couple of things we didn't get to, and I'm going to try to make up for it here with you guys over the next couple of appearances. But one was term limits, and I know it's become an issue for your colleague Gary Palmer, and you know that whole saga there. But where are you these days on the term limit question?
Well, you know, I signed a term limits pledge, and I certainly think there are some people that have been in Washington, D.C. way, way too long, and they've become a part of the system rather than representing the people. A lot of them don't even have houses in the states they represent anymore, or at least they don't live in those states. And that's a concern for me. And I've been a proponent of the term limits, but I always said that if the Jim Jordans of the world were going to go home, then we needed the Nancy Pelosi's and the Chuck Schumer's and you just pick one, Adam Schiff or Jerry Nadler. They all need to go home as well. So the good guys don't need to just be the ones leaving, because the system will never change. But there is an opportunity, I think, for some term limits, and I signed those pledges, and I've got some ideas on that. I don't have a lot of time to explain it here, but there are some ways we can drain this swamp, and I think that we're looking to do that down the road, but it needs to be across the board. It don't need just to be the conservative guy say, yeah, I'll go to the House, I'm bowing out of the fight, and leave the left to run the country along with the swamp.
Well, when you talk to Gary Palmer and to some others about this question, and this is where it makes sense to me, it's not necessarily Republican, Democrat. It's more about the branches of government and the legislative branch, the people's house, the people's representative, the one like direct democracy connection, if you will, versus these career civil servants, the bureaucracy entrenched in their jobs. They're not political appointees. They're there and they kind of run the show. And where you need a balance there, obviously you have judicial lifetime appointments. You have this career civil servant sector. The legislative branch is the only one that would hamstring itself and not be in a place to where it could at least know how the swamp is even drained, where the drain is, and know their way around. And that's maybe why you want some at least a little bit of experience there.
Yeah, and I certainly think even with lobbyists, I think if you're going to term limit the members, you should certainly look at limiting the lobbyists, because if not, you have the members being led around by the lobbyists, which that happens now because they control a lot of the purse strings. That's what happens so often in D.C. is we elect good people, and we say we send them to Washington, D.C. We don't know what happened. They become a part of the system. They become afraid of somebody hitting them on a certain vote. But, you know, the only thing I fear is not representing the people, and I think there's a mass of humanity out there that's looking for true conservative leadership, and I think that's why it resonates well. And certainly the swamp, to drain it, we have two levers, Jeff. We have hearings, which y'all have had hearings. We've had hearings in judiciary. People have said, I'm tired of hearings. And we have the mechanism of funding, and we have to exercise that mechanism, else we'll never drain the swamp. We have to look at waste. That's the only language they understand, is cut the flow of money. But it's always frustrating to me when they say, oh, I'm going to fight the swamp and I'm going to drain the swamp. And then you vote for the same continual resolutions that continue to fund the government at the same levels, and nothing ever changes. And that is the issue. That is the difference between me and my opponent, is I refuse to vote for CRs. I'm going to say we need to do 12 approach bills. We haven't done that in 27 years. We need to get this budget under control. And we need to, in order to drain that swamp, you must defund it. You cannot continue to fund the swamp and expect it to correct course.
The other area where we didn't spend a lot of time last night, and it wasn't intentional, but on veterans issues, and I guess it came up a little bit, your opponent talked about you leaving the Veterans Affairs Committee to go be on the Judiciary Committee. But aside from that, doing more for veterans, you know, and making it a better system. My dad was in and out of VA hospitals all my life, and I there's some really, really great ones, and there are some really absolutely third worldy VA hospitals. It never was consistent when we moved around a lot as a child. I always like thought that was kind of odd, but I it's been several years since I've been in one. But what do we need to do there? How do you shore up the VA and make it more of a, you know, there's a lot of problems with government, but that's one you would think you would want to be really running as efficient as possibly.
Yeah, I mean, certainly being a veteran in this race, and my brother's retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel. My son-in-law was an Army Ranger, 82nd Airborne, and I grew up right there at Fort Novosel or Fort Rucker. And so many of my friends' parents are veterans. And certainly when I was in Alabama, I chaired the Veterans Affairs Committee and did that for a number of years, passed more bills for our veterans than any member in my class. And so even now that I'm in D.C., the bill that I passed into law, which you'll find interesting, many members from our delegation have never passed the bill in law. I actually passed the bill in for Gold Star families to make sure they get in-state tuition. And so, you know, those things that you can continue to fight for the veterans, but that veteran, the VA, is a big, big bureaucracy, and there's very little oversight. And throwing more money at it is not the solution. Very often, government, we love to set the building on fire and then fund the fire department. And so we have to do some oversight with this spending. Again, purse strings are things we've got, and hearings are things we've got. And so I recognize there are problems in the VA. I've called the OIG in a couple of times on some issues we've had concerning veterans and active duty soldiers. We'll continue that fight. But one thing's been able to fire some of these folks, man. I'm telling you, it's getting – you're talking about tough to drain a swamp. If you can't fire some of these federal employees that aren't doing their job, then it makes it very difficult to really affect changes. So we've got to get some reforms in how we address employing people and keeping them around when they're not doing their job.
Well, and you know, when you sat on that committee, and I remember some of the things you were doing, and I watched some of the hearings, and you did some remote hearings even. I mean, did you feel like you made progress? Did you feel like there was like substantive change in the VA?
At times, yes, and at times, no. But I tell you where we get our wins, Jeff, and this is the one thing I found, is the 4,107 cases we solved in 36 months as of January of this year, and the $11 million we got back to veterans and to people at the IRS. So now, not all 4,107 of those cases were veterans' cases, but those were the wins we get, because Heather and I made a decision when I was running. I said, you know, it'd be great to do these town halls, and I did 14 in-person town halls in 1 month. But it would be great to bring our staff along with us and let them sit down one-on-one across the table, put a face with the name and with the Social Security number, and address that veteran's issues. And so even when you can't get a win in a big bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., you can sit down one-on-one with that soldier, that airman, that serviceman, that sailor right there and say, we are here to help you, and we will not let up until we do. And, you know, I had a veteran walk up to me the other day in Annie's. I was eating lunch, and he said, hey, Barry, he says, I've been waiting on my hearing aid since the war. And I said, which war? He said, the Vietnam War. He said, I called your office and within 2 weeks I had my hearing aids. And so those are the wins you get. And you can get those for the people every day of the week if you're willing to serve. And that's what we try to do. So sure, the bureaucracy in D.C. needs changing, but there are things we can implement today and we are doing in our office. That's why we win these awards, is because we're taking the care of the people in the district. They appreciate when you do that for them. They'll vote for you when you do that for them. And we can work together to make it better.
One more question on VA, and your predecessor, Martha Roby, was really, really big on this, and I have not really checked on or even heard about it, but that Montgomery VA, it's in your current district, and it may be, you won't, you know, if should you win this race and go on to win the general election, it won't be anymore, but it used to be just a hot spot, a hotbed of problems. Is that sort of under control, that situation there, at least based on what you know?
You know, I think it's improved. We've had some behind-the-scenes hearings on that with different people, and certainly had to call in OIG a time or two on some things within the district, and it impacted by that office. I think it's better, Jeff. It's certainly not where I would like for it to be, but that's something we're continually working on, and so I'm encouraged with the direction we're moving, but man, it is like turning the Titanic sometime with these agencies. And like I said, they know accountability. They just always want more money and don't seem to implement good work from that money. And so certainly I think it's improved, but I'm not pleased with where we're at, but I think it's improved.
Congressman, we'll get you out of here on this. Folks want to find out more about your campaign, they get involved or find out even about you. How can they do so?
So we got Barrymore Republican for Congress on Facebook. We also have that on Instagram. You can follow us. Our official page is U.S. Rep. Barrymore. And so I'd encourage people to certainly follow the official page and sign up for the More You Know newsletter. If we're coming to a town near you to do mobile office hours, if you're a veteran or if you're having a problem with the IRS as a small business owner, or even if little Johnny's lost his passport, come see us. We're happy to help. That's what we do. We're here to serve.
Congressman, as always, we appreciate your time, and let's talk again soon.
Hey, thank you, Jerry.
All right. Barrymore, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.